Comfort is often the first thing we're willing to give up, like taking a long flight for a vacation or waking up early for a workout. But don't let style be the reason you aren't comfy. Mack Weldon's Ace Collection makes it effortless to look put together while feeling truly comfortable. No compromises needed. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed pieces to keep you comfortable anywhere. Inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, the Ace Collection combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks. Upgrade your collection for the new year with new bomber jackets, half zips, sweats, crew necks, and much more. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. Get comfortable anywhere with the Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACWELDON.com. Promo code MAC25.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Returning to our top story, the weekend's American raid in Caracas in Venezuela, which led to the capture and removal of President Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores. Mr. Maduro is expected to appear in a New York court later today on charges that include his alleged support of major drug trafficking groups. But what was really behind this U.S. action that saw them remove a foreign leader in a sovereign state from power, albeit a dictator, which many in the world would have preferred to see removed from power, but not necessarily in this way? We're joined now by Scott Lucas, who is professor and political analyst of the Clinton Institute at UCD. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
Now, first of all, a simple question. Was this legal or not?
No. I mean, and this may be the easiest question we have all interview. Venezuela is a sovereign country. Nicolas Maduro is the leader of that country. Even if he was holding power because of a manipulated rigged election in 2024, even though he is politically repressive, and that many Venezuelans have faced detentions, have faced intimidation, have even been killed, unless you have an imminent threat from Maduro and Venezuela to another country, in this case, the United States, and an imminent threat would be like a military attack or would be like an imminent terrorist attack, you have no cause in international law to do this. There is a rough parallel here, and it is very rough, but in 1989, the George H.W. Bush administration invaded Panama to seize General Manuel Noriega, who ironically had worked with the CIA in terms of handling drug money. Noriega was taken to Florida. He was convicted, put in prison on drugs charges. And at the time, international legal experts said it was dubious the causes that they put forward for invading Panama, which went beyond the drugs, and to say that American citizens in that country had been threatened. So if that invasion was shaky, this one is even shakier in terms of a legal justification.
Now, already one of the listeners was on saying, what's different about Barack Obama going into Pakistan to capture and kill Osama bin Laden?
Because Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda had been responsible for 9/11 killing more than 3,000 people.
Which happened on American soil, of course.
Happened on American soil, as well as, you know, the fact that they had been responsible for terrorist attacks, deadly terrorist attacks around the world. But no, that specific attack on American soil, and we can debate the extent of the U.S. law that subsequently covered that and what it mandated. We certainly can debate the subsequent drone strikes that Obama launched for example, from Yemen, for example, in Africa. But the fundamental here is that Obama administration did not go into a sovereign country and kidnap the leader of that country.
Although in terms of life being lost, presumably those drone strikes by the Obama administration killed persons unknown on the ground or known or unknown on the ground. And the fact that in this case you have the kidnapping of a leader, it's qualitatively very different, if not quantitatively so.
Yeah, I mean, look, the post-1945 international order, and indeed international order to the extent that existed before that, is based upon the sovereignty of nations. And that is, you might not like what another country is doing. You might not like the way it handles its economy. You might not like the way that its politics are run. You might not like its military. Certainly, we could criticize a lot of countries in terms of the way that they repress their citizens. But there is not a basis in international law to go in and take the head of the government.
Now, it's interesting that President Zelensky has not lost his sense of humor, because when he was asked about this, he said, well, you know, the logic of going in and removing a dictator from power, just as America has done, well, Trump knows what he must do next. In other words, a reference to Putin. Go in there and remove Putin.
Yeah, and in fact, in the case of Putin, we actually have a basis for taking action against Putin that did not exist against Maduro. Remember that Putin is the subject of an arrest warrant by the International Criminal Court because of his mass deportation, kidnapping of Ukrainian children. There is no such international warrant out against Maduro. Now, if you were handling this, though, let me just add this very quickly, Pat. If the U.S. was very serious about trying Maduro on narco-terrorism, they could do that through the International Criminal Court. But guess who is not a member of that court?
Of course, yeah. In case some American presidents or other officials would be indicted. Will you stay with us, Scott, because we have on the line Victor Amaya, who's a Venezuelan journalist in Caracas. Victor, good morning and welcome.
Good morning and thank you so much.
Now, we're trying to figure out what is the reaction on the ground in Venezuela. I mean, obviously, there are many people who are glad that Maduro has gone and that the corruption which was evident in his regime has been, at least from the top, removed. But are we seeing joy unconfined on the streets?
No, not on the streets, and mainly because everybody is realizing that Maduro is gone, but not his government. His government is very much still in power. Everybody else is holding their positions, and now his vice president has been selected as interim president of the country. So the repressive machine is still in place, and actually we saw today a bunch of people, even civilians, armed with weapons and war weapons, even like threatening the people if they go out and chant in favor of Trump on his decision to remove Maduro from power.
So the question about Ms. Rodriguez, who was the vice president, who's now taken over and is de facto president pending some elections, whenever they might happen. There are some stories going around that she has been, if you like, flirting with the administration in the United States over recent months, saying that, you know, they could offer a more U.S. friendly regime in Caracas. Is that true?
Well, I mean, there have been several reports on that. The first one started to be floated around last October by the Miami Herald in the U.S. and also by AP News, by Associated Press. In both cases, they cited different people. Apparently, people who were in the know from these operations. Twice Delcy Rodriguez and her brother, the president of the National Assembly or the parliament, apparently offered this to Trump. And this was an option that was rejected on that moment. So now the stories are being reread again with the suspicions that maybe someone in Washington did take that offer and put it into reality.
So the question of how much support Maduro would have in the country, I mean, are those who would literally die for the Maduro regime, or is everyone sick and tired of the Maduro regime and wants something different?
Maduro lost the election of July 2024 by a margin of 70% for the opposition, 30%, almost 30% to Maduro, in an election that was actually very repressed and very much mobilized by fear. So there is a number that can that can speak about how much support he had in the country. 1 year and a half later, everybody knew, almost everybody knew in Venezuela that his government was not legitimate, that he was holding on to power without the legitimacy of the votes. but with the legitimacy, let's call it like that, of the weapons and the repressive structures. So there is a number to be counted on. And at the same time, from that moment, the presidential elections to today, there was more than 1,000 political prisoners, 25 people killed for actually go out to protest the electoral, the official electoral results that said Maduro won the election without any proof of that. So I don't think from July 2024 to this day anyone changed his view and started embracing Maduro.
Now, what then do you make of President Trump suggesting that the leader of the opposition now in exile, Maria Corina Machado, that she is not liked enough to take over in Venezuela?
Well, I think he is referring to how little actual power she can have and showed inside Venezuela. Her movement has no actual grab on any of the institutions of the Venezuelan bureaucracy, not even a mayorship, not a governorship, not even a deputy or a congressman or whatever. So she has no presence in any part of the Venezuelan institutions. So maybe the U.S. is signaling to that. Like she has no, as Trump said, she has no respect inside the country. And I mean, he means inside the bureaucracy, but also inside the military. For a year and a half, the military sided with Maduro, even though there were no proof that he won the election. So I think the U.S. is just making the call that they have to negotiate or make some understandings with the people actually in power and actually with the capability of controlling the situation.
What did you make, and what do Venezuelans generally make of the contention by Donald Trump that Venezuela had stolen American oil?
That statement was really confusing. Then started some people to explain that probably Trump was referring to the 2007-2008 process of expropriations of American assets from oil companies in Venezuela by the Hugo Chavez government. But to be honest, most of the Venezuelans know that the oil is like a sovereignty issue. That kind of statements didn't sit well with the majority of Venezuelans. But at the same time, it's like, well, if you put that in a balance with the idea of taking out the Maduro government, a lot of eyebrows start to be rising. So I think everybody understands that the true interest of Donald Trump is a steady oil supplier in the hemisphere, and that he's making these statements like wildly inappropriate in order to get to this point.
And he keeps mentioning Chevron, the American oil company, as ready to go in and spend billions in rehabilitating the infrastructure for producing oil. And no doubt all of this will become clear over the coming days. How do you see it all unfolding, Victor?
Chevron is actually operating inside Venezuela, but on a limited capacity. Trump said today that there are many companies trying to get in or wanting to get in to invest in the oil economy in Venezuela. And that's interesting that we are going to see what happens, because Delcy Rodriguez is not only the vice president now, president in charge, but she is also the petroleum minister, the oil ministry of Venezuela. So she has been in charge of circumvent the sanctions and still keep selling oil to foreign markets, even under the U.S. heavy sanctions against Venezuelan oil. So we'll see if she opens up to new opportunities in the U.S. market.
Yeah, and Trump has said to her, do what you're told or you'll face consequences even worse than Maduro.
Yeah, he has reiterated that three times today. Only today he said that three times.
Victor, look, thank you very much for that update from Caracas in Venezuela. Scott Lucas listening to that conversation still. Scott, good morning again. The question of oil, it's all about oil.
It's partly about oil, Pat, but I think you have to go wider beyond that. First of all, let's be clear. Trump put it on the table, despite that rambling, nonsensical press conference on Saturday where he didn't look very well, where he said, yeah, we the U.S. will run Venezuela because we want to take all the oil. And he said that in the past about taking oil from Iraq, for example. But it's also ego that's involved. It's about the fact that Trump, advisors like his defense secretary, Pete Hegseth, want to look like tough guys. It is partly about a quest, not actually for regime change now, as you heard from Victor Amaya, but for regime coercion. And that is to make the new president and the leadership, including the key defense minister, General Pedrino, accept U.S. demands, demands over the oil companies, but demands over the Venezuelan economy, demands to cut ties or limit ties with China, Iran, and Russia. And then beyond that, Pat, not to be underestimated, it is this quest for U.S. domination in the Western Hemisphere. We kind of laughed on Saturday when Trump called it the Don Roe Doctrine, as he was taking over the 823 Monroe Doctrine. But in fact, the National Security Strategy said that. They said we're going to have a Trump corollary to the Monroe Doctrine to dominate the Western Hemisphere. And in the past 48 hours, Trump and to an extent Rubio have threatened action against Cuba, Colombia, Mexico, and even Greenland, which raises the question beyond regime coercion in Venezuela. How far will they go to put pressure on other countries? Will they use the military option as well as economic and political moves?
Now, this is, all looks like the Clint Eastwood version of America. You know, I've got a big gun and I'm going to deal with you if you don't behave. However, there are voices already being raised, some MAGA voices like Marjorie Taylor Greene, ex-MAGA, I suppose, wondering about what is this guy doing? You know, he promised us no foreign wars. We saw what happened in Iraq, where the United States illegally went into that particular country on all sorts of excuses of weapons of mass destruction, which simply were not there. And even the argument by Colin Powell was not persuasive before they went in. And the idea that young American lives might be put on the line and how that'll go down with MAGA.
And that's why I think they're making the move, the administration, and I'm thinking predominantly through officials who are competent, like Secretary of State Marco Rubio, for regime coercion, not regime change. In other words, you know, the question we had when Maduro was kidnapped was, okay, well, you've done that, but you still have a government which is in place. What are you going to do about that? Are you actually going to put troops in to remove that government? And Trump hinted at that on Saturday. And we said, well, you know, what's wrong with boots on the ground? But the administration pulled that back. And I think one of the reasons why they're pulling it back is they know that they would be hoisted by their own petard of having said, we will not get involved in endless wars, where if you launch airstrikes across Venezuela and you then still haven't gotten rid of the government, you have that choice of putting troops in, and putting troops in to a foreign country has not worked out well for the United States in the past 25 years.
I have an interesting clip I want to play for you. This is James Tallarico, who's the Democrat state representative in Texas, who's a candidate for the Senate in the midterms in November. And this is what he had to say.
Yesterday, we saw flashes of the Iraq War. I'm 36 years old. I was 12. On September 11th, 2001, I saw the importance of keeping this country safe. As a millennial, I also saw how military disasters like the Iraq War robbed this nation of young lives, of billions of dollars, and of our moral standing in the world. How do you look a parent in the eye and tell them you sacrificed their child's life for big oil's bottom line? I've said from the beginning of this campaign that the biggest divide in this country is not left versus right, it's top versus bottom. And this new war is just the latest example of how billionaires run this country, run this economy, run this government, and now run our foreign policy. As U.S. Senator, I will never vote to send someone's son or daughter to war to make billionaires richer.
So finally, Scott, when will it dawn on the MAGA people, many of whom are not of great means, that this is, I suppose, a kleptocracy where the billionaires get richer and richer and richer and the poorer suffer in terms of healthcare, in terms of incomes, in terms of inflation. When will that dawn on MAGA, if ever?
Oh, I think it's dawning on some people, whether or not you call them MAGA, in that Trump's approval rating had been slipping well before the events of last weekend, especially on economic matters. I mean, he's at about minus 30 in terms of disapproval over approval on inflation. It's about minus 21 on the economy because the U.S. economy is running into problems. It's running into problems with inflation. It's running into problems with the effects of the tariffs. It's going to have serious problems with rising healthcare costs that are coming up. And I don't want to say this is a wag the dog, that Venezuela is a diversion from those economic problems, but certainly the Trump administration's hope is we get a focus on the fact that we got a bad guy and don't talk about the economic effects. I think the wider question here, Pat, is that a few Republican voices that you have mentioned already have come out and opposed Trump over this, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massey, Senator Rand Paul, but they were already standing against Trump. When are the bulk of Republican senators and representatives going to come out and say, look, we really have to rein in the way that this administration is acting, because it's not only damaging America, it's damaging us as Republicans.
And of course, we watched Trump literally asleep on his feet during that press conference when the general was making his contribution. Trump couldn't keep his eyes open. And this is the guy with charge of the nuclear codes. It's very concerning. Scott Lucas, thank you very much for joining us. Professor and analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.